Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning us in from wherever that may be, whether the internet, whether listening to the two-day-old podcasts, or actually listening now. Thanks for joining us. A promise we like to live by here on WCOM, at least on the Speakeasy and Radio Theater, is that if you keep us tuned in, we'll keep you turned on, so don't go away. Got a fascinating fellow doing a call-in today from California way. His name is Gerald LeBaron, and his company is Honor in Office. He's keeping a hawk's eye on the actions and neglect of our Congress. He's going to be calling in from Tujunga, California. He's promoting congressional reform, and I'd like to open with a statement. He's going to be calling in around about 10:10, and just in case, let me say this, just in case something happens in California and he doesn't manage to call in, we're going to give you a splendid music morning. But if he does, we'll go into congressional politics. I'm going to read an excerpt from an article he wrote. It's actually a four-page article, but I'm only reading a short piece of it. It is entitled, "Who is to Blame? What Do We Do Now?" by Gerald LeBaron. Our country is not the nation it once was. We can no longer guarantee the American dream, and we are no longer a beacon of hope to the rest of the world. America's torch is dimming. There are many things to blame. We could hold the political parties responsible. After all, their sole criteria in endorsing a candidate is whether that candidate has the resources to win and whether that candidate will vote party line and be a team player. Voting one's conscience, performing a due diligence, and thinking for oneself are nowhere on the list of criteria when a political party endorses a candidate. We can blame it on declining educational standards, too much TV, lack of moral and religious conviction, or a lack of family values as a basis from which all other values are derived. Another factor is that technology is advancing so quickly that our cultures haven't been able to keep pace. There is no shortage of factors. As one looks across our nation, one can see worthy causes, people and organizations trying to resolve America's issues and bring us back to our true glory. However, it appears that these well-intended causes are being hampered. If we look back in history as far back as the Roman Empire, Greece, and even Babylon, a common denominator is evident. Corruption at the highest levels of government has been at the root of the implosions of every great nation or empire. Self-serving, uncaring individuals gradually or quickly took more and more control and began making decrees not for the good of all, but for the good of a few, thereby punishing and wrecking the lives of the many, destroying both personal liberty and initiative. If we further examine history, we see a correlation between the rise of a nation or empire and rise of individual freedoms and liberties. The Magna Carta and its many earlier and later versions are governmental and humanitarian milestones that have consistently resulted in the birth or growth of a nation. The U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights are the ultimate example. As we examine our political process and the laws being passed over the last several decades, it is clear that our Constitution and Bill of Rights have been minimized, invalidated, and blatantly ignored. As a result, our nation is succumbing. How does one turn this around? Or at the very least, how does one slow down this decay so that these great causes, organizations, and people can turn our nation around and bring us back to a golden age? The idea is simple. The task is ambitious. It is congressional reform. And on that note, I'm going to suggest that we go to one of my good friends, Mike Cross's songs on his new album. And it's called, let me read the title, I think it's entirely appropriate for talking about Congress this morning and whose heads will roll. This is called Guillotine Blues by Mike Cross.
Well, I woke up this morning with a head in my hands. Everybody knows I'm the guillotine Russian border, and I ain't gonna stop till everybody knows I take a little off the top.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. Let's hear from an identity thief.
Identities are easy to catch online. I send people an official-looking email pretending to be their bank or credit card company and ask them to confirm their personal information. Books them every time.
Safeguard your personal information on the phone, online, and especially at home, because half of identity theft occurs by someone you think you know. Keep your identity to yourself and take a bite out of crime. Learn more from the National Crime Prevention Council at ncpc.org.
A message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the National Crime Prevention Council.
And we'd like to say that the guillotine man is on his way to Congress as we speak.
Claudio, I'd like to tell you that what you read earlier was so well done.
Thank
Very
you, sir.
Well read.
I have to hand it to Gerald LeBaron for putting that together, and I hope he calls us from California. He's due to call in a couple of minutes. And again, as I said, if he doesn't call, we're going to give you a splendid music morning and touch on this subject again at another time.
By the way, listeners, I'd like to tell you that your host, Claudio, is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. And Claudio, I'd like to ask you, what does house concerts mean?
Essentially, that we'll come into your home or your facility or even performed in theaters everywhere. But if you're throwing a party or want to have a special gathering or want to teach your kids some literature, depending on how, you know, for what reason you want to put this together. And the one-man band factor is I have a host of really fantastic musicians available to me to assist me. Usually I bring in one musician to do background music as I do the readings and occasionally even do effects depending on whether I'm performing Poe and my own works, of course, that are influenced by most of the classics.
And that website is claudioarts.com, where they can reach you.
That's right. claudioarts.com. And thanks for the plug. Looks like we may have somebody online. Could it be Gerald?
I believe so.
Let's check it out. Make sure we get the right guy and not just somebody making a call.
This is WCOM.
Gerald Barron here. How are you doing?
Doing well, my friend. How's California?
Glad to hear it.
I just read an excerpt. Just read an excerpt. Hold on a sec. I just read an excerpt from Who is to Blame? What Do We Do? By Gerald LeBaron. And folks, here we have my friend Gerald LeBaron calling from, how do you say that? Pronounced Jujunga, California?
Tujunga, California. It's part of L.A. County, just a little bit north of Hollywood.
Ah, all right. Well, how are you, my friend?
I am doing good.
Good.
I am doing good. I had a fairly productive trip to D.C. and just got back in town.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was looking forward to hearing about what went on in D.C. I don't know if you were able to pick this up on computer or whether you tuned into that or not, but I played a friend of mine did a song about the guillotine man, an inference on heads that need to roll in Congress.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Well, you know, the title of my movie, Fools on the Hill.
Fools on the Hill, yes.
And that was you know, you talk to any citizen and they'll think of another descriptive word other than fools.
I can imagine it. Well, you're a one-man army doing this. I understand that your film was nominated for, cue me in on that.
It won at the Lake Arrowhead Film Festival. It won Best Documentary.
Fantastic. Well deserved.
Yeah, thank you. And we did a premiere over here at in Los Angeles at the LA United Film Festival, and we received a standing ovation.
Fantastic. Well, that's encouraging. Yeah. I'd like to introduce you to my co-host, Rocco.
Hi, Rocco.
How are you?
Doing
how are
good.
You?
How are you doing?
How are you, Gerald? Doing right. Well.
I've been cueing him in on your plight, and he's quite impressed, as I'm sure anyone would be. A one-man army going up against Congress, that takes bravery and fortitude.
Gerald.
It is a daunting task.
No
well,
doubt.
You know how it went in North Dakota, so I figured I'd try something 1,000 times harder.
Yeah, right. Rocco, you were going to ask him something.
Gerald, are you originally from California?
I've lived in California most of my life. I spent 11 months in Missouri. I was actually born in Mexico.
That's why I can say Zuzunga. Or Huyunga.
Tahunga.
Thanks, I got it wrong again.
Right. Yeah. but I've lived in the Los Angeles area most of my life.
I see.
Well, you just lost a dear soul there, didn't we? Ray Bradbury.
Yeah.
He was a longtime friend of mine. We had a sort of a pen pal correspondence going for about a decade.
Oh, wow.
And he just went to Mars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good old Ray Bradbury. Yeah.
You know, Claudio and Gerald, I believe Ray Bradbury was maybe more popular in the 70s and 80s among...
Sadly, even though he wrote books until the end.
I know.
Up until, and was still very conscious. His writings are very psychological, so you got to be on your wit there. But he just said adios.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to you. Give us a quick...
He will be missed.
Yes, indeed. And no doubt his influence will be even stronger now. Somehow,
I hope so.
It's interesting how things take on another element after someone's passing, especially someone legendary.
Yeah.
Give us a quick synopsis of Fools on the Hill.
It's a documentary about my desire to get at least one state in this nation where the legislators are required to read the bills and allow us to see that absolute final version of the bill before they are allowed to vote on it. It's just as simple as that.
Absolutely. And why are we not granted this transparency?
Because they've got things to hide, and they're not proud of their handiwork.
Right, and all these last-minute attachments that come over the desk, that I guess they don't even look at those, do they?
No, they don't. There's so many different examples of this. So you can take it from the Patriot Act or the stimulus package or the Bush bailout or health care bill. They each have something in there that is just really, really poorly thought out. For example, whether one agrees with the health care bill or not, that's not my point. My point is they add things to it. There was a particular clause in there that had to do with 1099s. When it was passed, and what that meant is that every business, no matter where they spent their money, if it was more than $600, they had to fill out a 1099. Now, I have just a small business here in Los Angeles, and having to do that is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's
that sounds awkward as can be, yeah.
So much mountains of paperwork for really no reason. It means that if I have meals for my staff and it totals over $600 for the year, I've got to go to, Pizza Hut or whatever and say, what's your tax ID number? Give it to me so that I can then do that. Or if I get gas or anything like that, it just becomes mountains of work for no reason. Anyway, so what happens is the Senate, the day before... the health care bill was passed. The Senate added this particular piece of legislation into the health care bill in the middle of the night, and then they passed it the next day. Now, this was such a ridiculous thing that both sides of the party aisle thought it was incredibly stupid, and businesses were able to get them to take this out of the health care bill. But that's just one example.
The goal of
example,
it.
You know, you take a look at the Bush bailout, and we end up with, or is it the Bush bailout? Yeah, it's the Bush bailout.
It is, yes.
Where we're giving money to Wall Street, to GM and so on, and yet we've got no clause in there so that the executives don't get a golden parachute.
And we're still doing that. Exactly. This numbskull Jamie Dimon, who is just in front of Congress because of losing $2 billion that we know of through J.P. Morgan Chase, Congress was literally kissing his butt.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, you just look at each and every one of those bills, and you're going to find common sense, simple, idiotic flaws in them that really there's no excuse for. And so, you know, I don't care what bill you have to pass. If you have to pass, you have to pass it. But doggone it, you should do enough of a due diligence to where we're not being adversely affected by it.
There should certainly be a law against last-minute attachments that the public has not been made aware of.
Oh, absolutely. It should be one subject per bill. Because the bottom line is if you're allowed to bundle bills the way Wall Street bundles securities, you're going to force legislators to vote for things that they don't support, and those things would never get passed on their merit alone. So what happens is, as a member of Congress has a particular thing in a 300-page bill that they think is vital for our country.
Yeah, record.
And that's only 3 pages long. And Congress adds another 297 pages to it, and the members of Congress think, well, those 3 pages are what's vital. If I don't pass this entire 300 pages, that 3 pages may not ever get passed.
So essentially it comes down to a matter... it doesn't matter who you put in office because the system's going to go ahead and chew us up anyway. Rocco,
exactly,
you had
right.
something to say.
Gerald, I'd like to ask you something.
Sure.
What do you believe happens to the individual that gets elected to the Congress, to the Senate, the House of Representatives, or almost any office, and they go in with the greatest intentions and the you know, total integrity and honesty, and then something happens, and they get there, and they are not what they started out to be? What happens when they get into these government powerful positions? It just seems to corrupt them.
What happens is that most of the people who are running for legislative office, either at the state or the federal level, are groomed, meaning that those individuals typically have already been members of the Republican Party or Democratic Party for years and have been active participants in it. And so they've already been groomed year after year after year.
And to just...
It's the Democrats' fault, it's the Republicans', you know, whatever party you belong to, everything that's wrong with this country is because of the other party.
To add a little metaphor to your using the term groomed, it basically means having your soul sucked out of you.
Yeah, basically. And so that's the first thing. Now, they still, before they get in office, they still can have some level of still wanting to do the right thing, but they've already been groomed quite a bit, or they wouldn't be endorsed by the party.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they get into office, they discover how the system really works, and they are basically browbeat into towing the line. And the bottom line is the way the system works right now is that they're more or less told, you know, paraphrased, obviously not in these exact words, but here's what it amounts to. If you ever want Mr. New Legislator, Mr. Freshman or Freshwoman, if you want to ever get one of your pet projects through, you had better vote for these things and you'd better support the party.
Well, let me ask you this, and I think you have a... It does.
It does.
Well answered. But I'd like to ask you two other things. How do you think third parties or coalition parties would work in this country? Instead of just having two dominant parties and then third parties that are much smaller and less influential. In the past, a lot of times, legislation that was passed by the major parties was first initiated by the third party, or the idea came from it, and they would pick up on it. But how do you think coalition parties would work in this country?
I think it shakes things up, but I don't think it has any lasting value. So it could have some temporary value, but not lasting. And the reason I say that is that You can take a look at any nation, you know, whether it be Canada, Britain, or all the other various nations that have three and four parties, and you'll find that that third and fourth party hasn't resulted in honest or good government.
Right. To add something to add something to that consideration, which is I think is a big disappointment fact, and that is that we, the American people, don't seem to want to get off the couch and kick these guys straight. We're allowing this. We're enabling this. These atrocities to happen, and somehow we must be suffering under the illusion that the system is going to fix itself. And we keep putting the fox in charge of the hen house. What's up with this?
Well, that gets to my next question, Claudio.
Well, let me answer this just a little bit more too, because see, the thing is when you have a legislative procedure, the way that we have it now, a third party comes in and they have to follow that legislative procedure. So instantly, they are forced to kowtow, basically. I mean, when you can take a bill that you really, really, really love, and you give it to the other members of Congress, and you submit it to committee, and then the committee says, "Oh, not interested."
Or they cut it to pieces.
That's the end of your bill. Or let's say it gets to a committee and committee votes yes on it. The Speaker of the House or the Senate Majority Leader, he can just never call it up for a vote.
Right.
So we have a legislative procedural problem that has to be solved in order for a third party to be more workable. Otherwise, they're just going to get stuck in the rut just like the two parties already are.
Well, what do you think of term limits, not just for congressmen, for everyone that gets elected in this country, to anything from school board to county commissioner to mayors to legislators, state senators, congressmen, House of Representatives, senators, everyone, term limits?
Absolutely. That's my opinion.
What do you think of that?
Ideologically, I love the idea. Practically speaking, we have term limits in California. And it hasn't done anything for us.
How come it? I mean, how can it not do anything when term limit suggests the end of something?
Well, the way it works is let me give you another example. Let's take Steve Jobs and let's give him term limits for being the CEO of Apple. What would happen to Apple?
You're talking about Hobbs. Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs.
Jobs. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, Steve Jobs. And let's take a look at Clint Eastwood or anybody, you know, and say, well, you can only be an actor for 8 years, or you can only be, you know, a genius innovator for 8 years, and then you have to go do something else. So the one of the problems I see with it is that when you do get really, really good people, you've got to get rid of them. But the other thing is that it takes a while for a legislator to you know, as soon as he comes into office, if he's brand new, it takes a while for him to learn the whole system, what works, what doesn't work. There's a lot of study involved. And as soon as you say you're only going to be in office for 6 years or 8 years, what happens is the first 4 years he's in office, he has to hire consultants. He has to have experts that can help guide him through the process. And the problem with these experts and these consultants is that there's no laws that they have to follow, which basically means that they're in bed with the lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
So then these legislators are taking their cue from consultants who are paid by lobbyists. So,
right.
So you have problems like that. But besides all of that, the basic issue that I have with term limits is that I haven't seen a single state or a single nation that has term limits where it's resulted in good government or honest government. I just haven't seen it. Ideologically, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But practically speaking, it doesn't. The proof is in the pudding. Is it actually working? So we have to go back a little bit further to the fundamentals, and we've got to go, okay, well, why isn't this working? And, you know, if we want term limits and we want a third party, how can we make those viable institutions?
Something else to hash over.
Well, Gerald, I think we're dealing with another problem that a lot of people don't really realize, and that is the system, the government, the Constitution was written about 230 years ago or so, and it was written with 4 million people in this country, and it operated well, and it has served very, very well, and it has adjusted, and it's you know, able to change and meet the needs of the times. Well, now we're not just dealing with 150 million people, say like in 1940. There's 310, 20 million people in this country, and something needs to be adjusted or changed or worked on and improved to make the system work. It's sort of like if you have a truck that is carrying 1,000 pounds and you need to carry 10,000 pounds. You have to do something to the truck to make it carry the load. And we need to do something.
I agree 100%.
You see what I'm saying?
I don't know that it's the Constitution that needs to be changed.
Well, I don't think we need to change the Constitution.
It's a legislative procedure that needs to be changed.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
They're certainly ignoring it enough.
Exactly. People don't realize that there's so many people in this country, and it complicates everything. Everything.
Yep.
If we had 10 million people in the country right now, it would be a completely different country.
Let me take a quick moment for station identification, folks. You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater here on WCOM 103.5 FM. I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my underwriter, the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham. You can see what's going on there by going to carolinatheater.org. Today on the Speakeasy, we're talking to Gerald LeBaron, calling in from California. From his company, Honor in Office, Keeping a Hawk's Eye on the Actions and Neglect of Our Congress. He's calling in from Huhunga. I hope I got it right that time.
Tahunga.
Tahunga, thank you. And promoting congressional reform. Back to you, Gerald.
Oh, okay, good. when we take a look at Congress, there's so many different things that you can look at in terms of the actual legislative procedure that if you were trying to explain it to a 10-year-old, that child would look at you in utter disbelief.
I believe that.
When you can add hundreds of pages to a bill in the middle of the night and pass it the next morning, when you can bundle a whole bunch of bills together that nobody's read, that are completely disrelated, where bills in those 300 or 400 pages would never, ever get passed on their merit alone or by themselves, then what we have is we have a procedural problem, a legislative problem, and that's why I'm going to D.C. on July 17th is to demand congressional reform, is to say, hey guys, first and foremost, let's think on these bills a little bit. Let's read them. The question is, how can you be sure the bill you haven't read is going to solve the problem you haven't looked at? And how is it in this country we don't have the right to see the final version of the bill long before the vote? And when you get those two things instituted, then you're able to protect yourself from the poorly thought out laws. I mean, imagine if the final version of the Bush bailout or the stimulus package or the Patriot Act or the health care bill were posted online 30 days before the final vote.
As it should
and
be.
We were able to go in there and say, wait a minute, we're not being protected from golden parachutes.
Yeah, wait a minute, this is Nazi Germany or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got things like the National Defense Authorization Act, which now makes it okay to kidnap U.S. citizens under suspicion of terrorism and belligerent acts. Those things were posted online 30 days before the vote, it would give us enough time to where we could read them, we could ask our members of Congress questions, we can say this 1099 does not work, we can say this particular clause doesn't work. Maybe I can suggest this.
We, the American people, don't realize that what's happening before our eyes is basically chewing us up. Rocco, you had something.
Gerald, I'm going to ask you a tough question.
Sure.
When do you think the system worked best? And possibly look at that model.
Or better, anyway.
And use it to improve what we have now. I'm talking about the years, the times when the Constitution and the government say was functioning the best for the country and for the people.
I don't know the exact year, but before they started committees.
Before they started committees.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was a time where there were no committees. And as soon as they started having, you know, the Ways and Means Committee and the Armed Services Committee and all these various committees, it gave them license to no longer do a due diligence. They would just take the word of the committee members.
Well, then that would have been after World War One.
That would, okay, if whenever they started committees, because I don't know when they actually started them. But that would be a good point to spot, and you could see. And in fact, that makes sense because they were paying a lot more attention to the Constitution back then as well. And there were quite a few laws that they that were brought to Congress where Congress just turned it down because they were unconstitutional. Now Congress doesn't pay attention to that kind of thing.
Sure.
But certainly that would be one point. There may be earlier ones. I think it has a lot to do with abdicating responsibility. I mean, if you take a look at the Constitution, that thing is only about 12 pages long. And our founding fathers spent months on this thing.
Give us a second there,
Gerald. Months on it. Yep.
Well, Gerald, I believe the beauty of the Constitution is in that it can be changed to meet the needs of the time.
I just want to say that given the intensity of the subject matter here, let's take a little musical interlude so that you and I can discuss some things offline quickly, Gerald, and then we'll go back.
Sure.
And here we go. We'll be right back.
FM Community Radio. This is WCOM, located here in downtown Carrboro. We are now the most innovative and diverse radio station in the Triangle area. Thanks for listening this morning. Now back to Claudio.
All right, we're still back. We're still here with Gerald Barron. We had a bit of a technical glitch, folks, so please pardon us for suddenly having to cut off like that. But for some reason, something went dead there for a second. So please bear with us. Again, we have Gerald Barron online of Honor in Office. He's keeping a hawk's eye on the actions and neglect of our Congress. And he's promoting congressional reform. He's been doing this ever since I started my radio show. It goes about, I've known you for 3 years now.
Yeah.
So pick it up wherever you want to, but sorry for the cutoff.
No worries at all. Well, let's see. The bottom line is that if we want a third-party system or term limits or our legislators to actually be working for us, we've got to start getting legislative reform. I mean, we just absolutely have to have it.
Oh, no doubt.
And it's from the ground up. I mean, when you get to a point where it's where you can add hundreds of pages or bundle bills or vote the next day and that kind of thing, that is a symptom of so many other things that are wrong with the legislative procedure.
And that's exactly where we are.
Yeah, yeah. And so it really needs it from the ground up. But certainly the start is, I'm doing my march on July 17th. I'm going to be in D.C. We're going to have a bunch of other people from around the country. And we're going to be there saying, hey, we want to see that final version of the bill. We don't want any more bundling bills. One subject per bill, so that we can get some common sense in here.
How many people do you have available to you that are joining you on this?
I've got 10,000 petition signatures.
Fantastic.
And I don't know how many are actually going to be joining me there yet. I haven't asked them. It's actually one of the things I'll be working on this week. So I have no idea.
I know. I signed on, but I was just wondering. Hopefully, you'll have a bunch of people ready to walk up those steps with you.
I think we will. We'll have enough there to where they're going to take note. That's for sure.
Absolutely, I would definitely.
That's
say
for
that.
Sure. The whole idea behind it is that we need to be able to protect ourselves from self-serving.
Absolutely, we're having
our
a repeat.
Country is, you know, our politics, I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're having a repeat of the Roman Empire here.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically bought and paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it doesn't matter how many laws you pass against lobbying and special interests and so forth, they have enough money to where they just weasel their way in anyway.
Right.
But if you have 30 days, that final version is available for everybody to see 30 days before the vote, well, then you can see whose fingers are in the pie.
I've always said that we have the truest form of democracy now by having the computer, the internet, and so on, because everyone can see things, and what you're pointing to is vital.
Yeah, yeah. And so with that, and you see that, Joe Schmo Oil Productions Company or whatever is influencing this bill, and we can see that it favors him, then we could even do a boycott, because we've got 30 days. We have enough time for everybody, liberals and conservatives alike, to find clauses in it that are wrong, and we can join together and stop it from being passed. And we also have enough time to provide actual thoughtful input. Well, instead of doing a 1099, maybe you should do a such and such, and then that would solve the problem. But right now they're rushing things through and think they've got like these great ideas, but they haven't thought it through.
And there's really no stopping
days,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. So there's really no particular policing of this at all.
No, there is no policing of it. None. And in actual fact, instead of us being represented by each of our representatives, we're really not.
Right.
Let's say that I'm a freshman and I go into, and I'm now a representative in the House. If I'm in the minority, well, pretty much I can't represent anybody.
Yeah, right.
Because if I'm in the minority, I'm going to be ignored. So right off the bat, almost half the people or almost half the country is not being represented.
Money talks and the American public walks, yeah.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, simple things like a legislator should be able to submit a bill and have it actually come up for a vote. He shouldn't have to. I mean, a committee can examine it and can do their best to improve it or whatever. They can all vote no on it. But the bottom line is that representative, if he's to truly represent his constituency and all of America, he needs to be able to get his bill voted on by the entire Congress.
Absolutely.
And he needs to be able to demand that his bill isn't altered in any way if he doesn't want it altered. I mean, some people can have good ideas, but what happens is let's say you do come up with a good idea, you submit it to the committee, amends it, adds a few hundred pages, it goes here and there and everywhere, and after all said and done, it's time for a vote. The very congressperson who actually introduced the bill, he may very well vote against it because it's been so butchered.
No doubt.
That's not representation.
And the thing that I see, even if we managed, and this is a pipe dream, even if we managed to correct this thing to some degree and actually get some policing going, there are so many Congress members that have become prostitutes to the system and to whoever's, you know, putting money in their pockets that I question that even then that we would have anything.
You know, you never know. I mean, you never know. We stopped SOPA and PIPA, I think, to a large part with Wikipedia and Google's
yes.
help. So we are able, if we unite, we are able to make a difference. If we have the time to thoroughly digest that final version of the bill, and then, because I doubt if there's a bill that's been passed in the last 5 years that there hasn't been some clause in it somewhere that the majority of the American people have disagreed with. I mean, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but you get the idea.
I get your point. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and so we need, you know, we want to get rid of these self-interests, these selfish people who are buying the politicians and so forth. All we have to do is see that final version or allocation of funds. So it's not just the final version of the bill; it's the final allocation of funds before the final vote. So we can see where all that money is going long before it actually gets implemented and passed into law.
We certainly have a mountain to climb in that regard.
I'm sorry?
I say we certainly have a mountain to climb in that regard.
Yes, we do. And it is quite a challenge because, you know, when I went to Congress, when I went down to D.C. last week, it was very apparent to me. And I have to tell you this truthfully. When you look at these various members of the legislature, they truly believe, most of them do anyway, that they are doing the very best that they can for their constituents in their country. They truly believe that, even though the next day they're going to add hundreds of pages to a bill and pass it the next morning. You know what I mean? But they truly believe that. And so it's really quite a challenge to get them to see that what they're doing is destructive. It's not helping our nation at all. I mean, for the most part, Congress caused our great recession.
I would say so. Yes.
So, but they don't actually see that. They've kind of got blinders on. It's like a horse race where the horses are wearing these blinders,
And
they only see one way, and that's the way of their party.
I think Rocco has a
Gerald,
an interjection.
Let me ask you this. Is there any way that these bills can be simplified?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, why are they, you know, hundreds of pages long?
Well, I mean, if the bill isn't 100 pages long, how are you going to be able to insert loopholes?
All of these riders and loopholes.
Right, loopholes, pork, self-serving clauses, that type of thing. I mean, if the pages aren't super, super, super long, how are you going to be able to hide it in there?
Well, what would it take to pass legislation? I know it would take the majority in each house and the president has to sign it, but is it doable and possible to pass laws to simplify the bills and take away the riders, take away the pork, take away all of this extra thing added on to any bill that shows up?
Well, I have to tell you, if you require that the final version of the bill is made publicly available online, you know, well in advance of the vote, and you also make it one subject per bill, what will happen is that, see, the thing is like myself, I don't read all these various bills, and the reason why I don't read them is because they're changing every hour on the hour, and I just don't want to waste my time. But you'll find that more and more citizens will get interested when they know they've got 30 days, this is the final version, and then they can check it out and do their own due diligence, and then they call their congressperson and they say, what about such and such? Then that, it's going to force the congressperson to start reading the bills. And when the members of Congress are forced to begin reading the bills, those bills are going to get much shorter real quick.
Yeah,
that's all you have to do.
Essentially, you'll be scaring them straight.
That's exactly right. So, you know, you just require those two things, one subject per bill, and having that thing, that final, absolute final version, well in advance of the vote, it's going to force them to start making them shorter and shorter and shorter, because it's really, really rough reading those things.
I'm sure.
And that's one of the reasons why they don't read them.
Well, what about the problem that would be incurred with having this knee-jerk reaction to bills passed too quickly, you know, where you have 30 days to pass a bill and they go ahead and do it, but it's a lousy bill and it's going to make things worse. And you're stuck with it.
I don't quite understand the question.
Yeah, what was the question there?
The question would be, how could we prevent poor legislation from getting passed so quickly?
Well, you have that final, absolute final version of the bill with all amendments, everything, it's all finalized, and then we've got 30 days to see it. And then we're able, with that amount of time, we're able to provide thoughtful input. For example, those 1099s, it was part of the health care bill. If we had 30 days on that, well, on that one we'd need a little bit longer, but let's say we had 30 days on that, there would be a number of people who would see the 1099 issue and would bring it up and say, this doesn't work.
Gerald,
and go ahead.
A quick moment. I wanted to be sure before we bring the end of the show about, because we've only got about 5 or 6 minutes left. Give the public your contact information, how they can get in touch with you, and also this this bill that you've just had people sign.
Okay. Well, they can send me an email through info@honorinoffice.org. honorinoffice.org. But the best thing would be to just go to foolsonthehillmovie.com, and they can see a trailer for the movie for the feature documentary, which covers a lot of this in a humorous fashion. And they can also sign the petition there. They could go to foolsonthehillmovie.com/petition and reach me that way as well. I'd love to have anyone who wants to join me July 17th as we converge on Congress.
Absolutely. And some months back, I did an interview with you about Fools on the Hill, so the folks, any folks interested can actually go to that podcast on Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater and pull that up, and you can hear more about the documentary itself.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, actually, it was a blast watching it. I couldn't say it was a blast going through it.
No, I'm sure you couldn't. Good Lord, no. But I'm really glad you took the honors that the film did, because you've got to acknowledge what you went through in that. It was I'm not even going to give it away, but it was pretty extraordinary the lengths to which you went.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of work, and I'm continuing to do it.
So I would like to say let's stay in touch on this subject and keep me updated, and we'll do more shows on this in the future. You're part of the family now. And I think
we're
pretty much going to bring the show to a wrap with some outgoing Mike Cross music.
Okay, good meeting you, Rocco. Thank you very much, Claudio.
Pleasure talking with you.
I want to thank you for being on again, buddy, and again, yeah. we'll continue this as you proceed.
I look forward to it.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
Cheers.
This is 103.5 WCOM Chapel Hill, Carrboro. WCOM is also heard online at WCOMFM.org.
Black cat crossed the highway late one night. my headlights. So I hit my brakes and saved that black cat's life. He came over to me and he said, I sure appreciate what you just did. If you hadn't hit your brakes, well, I'd be dead. Black cat magic night. Black cat magic night. He said, I am a genie in disguise. Since you treated me so doggone nice, I'm gonna grant you any wish you like. So I thought for hours, what should my wish be? I got so tired I couldn't think clearly. Said, what I need right now is a good night's sleep. Black cat magic night. Black cat magic night.